ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Among the everyday foods of Japan, one of the most common and popular are udon noodles.
In Japan, noodles are an everyday staple and a cultural symbol. They are loved by all ages, from children to seniors. They are an essential part of daily life in Japan.
They have a long and layered history in the country. Wheat-based noodles were introduced to Japan around 1,200 years ago, possibly by Buddhist monks travelling to and from China. And as the nation urbanised during the Edo era from the 17th century, noodle stalls flourished with the promise of a quick, cheap, hearty meal at any time of the night or day. Historians have even drawn a link from the noodle vendors of old to the ubiquitous convenience stores that pepper the Japanese landscape today. Over centuries, Japan's distinctive udon variety came into being. Thick, smooth, white noodles with a springy, chewy texture, a quality Japanese people call mochi mochi.
Mochi mochi is the, for me, it's like, you know, texture is, feel like happiness. It's like, wow, just like that.
In Japan, udon noodles are a serious business with regional varieties of broth, toppings and preparation techniques, all inspiring fierce local pride. So, how did Western Australia become one of the top suppliers of udon noodle wheat to Japan?
When I was in Japan, you're in this noodle bar and you're eating the udon noodles and you think, oh my goodness, this could be my wheat that I've grown way back in the wheat belt of WA, and I'm now sitting in Tokyo eating udon noodles produced from West Australian grain. What a buzz.
I'm Jonathan Green and this is Every Bite from ABC Radio National. It's all about food and the places where food, culture, science and history collide. This week, Aussie udon, from wheat belt to noodle bowl.
Okay, what do you think of colour?
I think it's very slightly dull.
Very slightly dull?
Yeah.
Okay. My comment on control is creamy but very slightly dull.
Yeah. My comment is slightly yellow but very slightly dull.
When I say that udon noodles are a serious business in Japan, I mean it. These noodles are being put through their paces in a Perth laboratory. Every year, representatives from Japan's Ministry of Agriculture and the Japan Flour Millers Association travel to Western Australia to do a quality assurance test on the Australian wheat supply. And this isn't just any wheat. It's a segregated type of specialty wheat grown just for noodles. And the person bringing us into this lab is Landline reporter Christy O'Brien.
Hello, Jonathan.
Christy, hello. I always thought, foolish me, that wheat was wheat.
Well, you and me both, and I have to say I have been on a steep learning curve about the intricacies of wheat, from bread to cereal to feed for livestock to then, yeah, this really high-quality wheat for noodles only.
How long has this been going on in West Australia?
So it started in the 1970s when the Japanese government or officials there started to realise that there was this really appropriate or high quality wheat being produced from Western Australia that met the requirements that they needed for their noodles. And this was the start of this really long serving relationship. They were growing a variety called Gamenya, which was actually brought in because there was an issue with stem rust at the time. So they started growing that, and it just happened to be that it also worked perfectly for this market. They did that for about 20 years with this variety, and then they started to move on to higher yields, which become an issue because then they weren't supplying that wheat to Japan anymore, and there was a little bit of outrage.
Back in the 1960s and 70s, a lot of Gamenya wheat was grown in Western Australia because of its rust resistance. The Japanese discovered good starch levels also made it the best wheat in the world for udon production. But during the 1980s, farmers started replacing gamenia with higher-yielding varieties, less suitable for noodles. And it was only when protests were made in Japan that growers here realised there was a special market to maintain.
So as a result, they did bring in this sort of permanent system to ensure that there was supply to Japan from the wheat in Western Australia. And now it is such a significant and, dare I say, stable market in a time where we look around the world and we see, you know, some volatility in global markets. It's certainly one that farmers can bank on.
So, Christy, what's this industry worth?
The value of the market is around $300 million, and that's 750,000 tonnes of wheat. So it is significant. About 10%, I believe, of the wheat produced from Australia is going into this market.
Special noodle wheat. Can we actually pin down the difference between these types of wheat?
It comes down to some of the qualities, and this is where it gets really minutia on what is being produced for that noodle. So essentially they want a really soft flour, a very low protein and high starch. So all of those qualities in the actual wheat then translate into the quality of the noodle, the colour of the noodle, the taste, of course, but things like texture and these really fine qualities that to the lay punter probably doesn't mean anything, but in the very specialised world of udon noodles, this can be kind of the make or break between a good noodle and one that just does not make the grade.
Mochi mochi.
It's a great word, isn't it? I think it should just be embraced wholeheartedly. It sort of says it all. Larissa Caddo is actually the General Manager of Education and Training at Grains Australia. They're the outfit that hosts this annual quality check.
It is a very different type of wheat, and it's linked all the way back to different set of genetics that our breeders use to develop premium quality udon wheat versus, for example, wheat that we typically use for bread baking. The difference is there are quite a few differences. Basic differences, if you like, it's in the softness of the grain, so genetically different soft grain for udon noodles versus hard grain for bread like products. There's a different requirement for protein content, so a range of protein that's preferred for good quality udon making versus more stronger, higher protein type wheats typically preferred for bread making. Most importantly, I would say, for good udon texture is the unique quality of starch. And again, that's linked to the genetics and the very special type of starch is unique to the mochi-mochi udon texture, which is preferred in the Japanese market. It is so much more complex than just the taste or just the quality of the final product, if you like. So taking into account, if you like, the development of new varieties, so the items that the breeders need to focus on to deliver a good quality package for our farmers. And then obviously the items that farmers need to focus on to deliver good quality package for export market. However, when it comes to udon noodles or specifically high quality requirement of the Japanese market, it's probably fair to say that the sensory aspects of the final product, so the taste, the eating quality, the looks of noodles, color and color stability of noodles, is the main kind of tick required at the end of the day for the breeders to get their varieties classified as Australian noodle wheat.
Larissa Caddo from Grains Australia. Now, to ensure that the Japanese trading partners are fully satisfied with the quality of Australian noodle wheat, she and her team run this annual sensory assessment. You're getting to peek behind the curtain of that assessment today. So, what kind of background does one need to assess a noodle? Well, quite a sophisticated background, it seems.
The background is in, generally speaking, grain quality, cereal science, if you like, and then more specialised, the quality of noodles. Many different types of noodles, understanding quality requirements of many of our Asian markets, and fine-tuning or translating those quality requirements to our industry, specifically classification body managed by Grains Australia, but also our breeding industry, so supporting the development of new varieties through matching quality requirements of our many different markets.
Essentially, we weigh the flour, 400 grams of flour. After that, we weigh the water based on the moisture. For udon noodle, we used 34% of moisture, so we weigh the water, 136 grams of water, 8 grams of salt on it,
So the process that we'll see here today with the team is very important for final classification of Australian noodle wheat varieties. So it is a process that is tightly linked to the classification system because sensory assessment done here with the visiting experts from the Japanese Flour Milling Association or experts from the flour mills in Japan representing the Japanese Flour Milling Association, it's a critical assessment for any lines going for classification into Australian noodle wheat or subsequently for the Japanese udon market. And so this process here is that we will see today, it's exactly part of that. It's a process by where the breeding companies, for example, submit their material or their best advanced lines for sensory assessment, and the team here analyzes the grain quality, all the way from grain quality, milling quality, flour and rheology. And then, of course, ultimately, at the end of the day, we make noodles here, and we'll demonstrate that today. And then we, of course, assess the noodles by ultimately conducting the eating quality test and put every single line through a very rigorous assessment test.
That must be the best part of it, I'm sure.
That is the best part of it.
What did you think of number two?
It's slightly soft and very slightly elastic.
So positive score?
Positive score.
Compared to the control?
Yes. Yeah.
7 to 8?
7 to 8 and 70.5 plus.
Good.
Tomokazu Kubo is a member of the Japanese delegation participating in today's sensory assessment.
I am a noodle expert. I have a master's degree in agriculture. And since I studied with Nippon, a flour milling company, I quickly learned noodle skills and became noodle expert. The most important requirement for sensory assessment is the ability to detect slight differences in texture. That takes good training and a lot of experience. I also have experience in as a panelist evaluating new varieties in Japan. In addition, it is important to understand what Japanese market expects from noodle wheat.
Texture
is slightly soft, 7 to 8, and slightly sticky. Mm-hmm.
Better elasticity and stickiness?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah.
The key qualities are color and texture. Noodle wheat has many requirements, but the key ones are bright creamy yellow color, moderate protein level, and starch with moderate stickiness.
So these particular varieties of wheat, the ones vying for this coveted grading of Australian noodle wheat, is it exclusively a West Australian product? Larissa Kato.
This engagement and the relationship with the Japanese market is unique to Western Australia and the production of Australian noodle wheat environment. It's best suited for this type of wheat in Western Australia. It is possible to produce smaller segments elsewhere, but really Western Australia, it's only a significant supplier of this type of wheat to the Japanese market.
From ABC Radio National, you're listening to Every Bite. I'm Jonathan Green. And today we're looking at the long-standing relationship between West Australian wheat growers and Japanese udon noodle makers, with some help from Landline reporter Christy O'Brien. Now, Christy, even listeners back east will have heard of the wheat belt in Western Australia, but describe it for us.
Yeah, it's sort of the area around Perth and then goes all the way out to the gold fields, down to the southern sort of area of WA and then up to the little bit of the north. Places like Geraldton are these really big powerhouses of agriculture and particularly for producing grain. In fact, nearly half of Australia's total wheat production comes from this area. It's over 13 million hectares, roughly 4,000 farms and worth up to $10 billion a year in economic value. So it is really an important part of this country. And I have to say, one, I didn't even realise just how vast the production here was and how much is exported to the world.
A whole lot of wheat, but why might a farmer specialise in just the noodle wheat variety?
Well, it really is that lucrative market. So the bread market, for instance, would be worth less than this udon noodle market. So you're talking millions of dollars in difference. If they are graded into that higher category, they really can make a vast margin out of their wheat. And that's what it all comes down to, I suppose, in these times where farmers are really looking to maximise their crop and the yields and all the work they put in. You know, what they want to get bang for their buck. Grains Australia say that the value for growing that udon noodle wheat compared to other classes is around $16.6 per hectare. That is around a 34% boost to growers' profit. So big numbers we're talking if they do make that higher grade.
So presumably it's a pretty attractive proposition for growers. What do they have to do to be part of this scheme?
So growers will have to plant a specific variety that's been formulated with those end qualities in mind. So it's a case of all of these stakeholders working together to figure out what makes the best noodle, then working backwards to formulate that into a seed or into a varietal that works. Then many of the growers, once they take the crop off and those mighty harvests that we see happen every year, that'll go through a bulk handler or an exporter like CBH Group, who does the grading for them. So, of course, Jonathan, given the potential value of this high-quality noodle wheat, sending off their harvest for grading can be a really nerve-wracking experience.
Yes! So what's awesome with the CBH app now, your truckie goes to town, drops off their wheat, and you sit there and you're waiting for your app to come up to go, yes, you made noodle grade, and you're like, yay! So it's actually sort of instant gratification. So I'm Tracy Lefroy. We're on Cranmore Park, which is in Bindi Bindi in the WA Wheatbelt. We are farming 8,000 hectares here. That includes leasing our neighbours. We're about 80% cropping, 20% livestock. So we've got export hay, barley, oats, canola, lupins. And this year, we've also put in some lentils just to try and get sort of a legume into the rotation. And obviously, a fair bit of wheat, including our noodle wheat. Agriculture is one of those things where you feel like sometimes you're saying it hasn't rained enough, sometimes it's rained too much. So you feel a bit like a whinging farmer. But so last year for us, even though we had okay yields, we had really poor quality grain, which was weather-induced quality issues. But this year we've actually got amazing quality. We feel really proud of what we've grown. But as with anything, it's been really interesting looking at it and going, so this is our best yield ever on our farm this year, which is phenomenal. But in terms of dollars per hectare profit, nowhere near our best year, just as input prices increase. Grain prices aren't quite as high as they've been in the past. So we're finding that that break-even yield is climbing each and every year. So we're having to get smarter about what we do. We're having to, with our decision-making processes, that sensitivity analysis you do of what's the cost-benefit ratio here is becoming so increasingly important. So I feel like farming is not only about sustainable production, not only about meeting the requirements of our customers, but also really heavily about risk management. How do we make the best decision with the information we have at the time? So you think if you're growing a premium wheat product, so say for the noodle market, you are getting paid significantly more than if you're growing a feed wheat. So for us, hitting that noodle specification is crucial. And it's also something that brings me great joy to think that here in the Wheatbelt of WA, we are making decisions on the ground in the paddock that change the way someone's udon noodles taste in their bowl in Japan. Like, I find that wild, but also really exciting to think all through the supply chain, we are making decisions that impact how someone's food tastes. And I think in agriculture and in farming, sometimes you can get very caught up in what you're doing on your day to day and what you're doing in the paddock and, you know, what fence is happening, what fertiliser you're applying. But to remember in the back of your head, the end game is we are producing food for the population of the world. And if we are lucky enough to hit that premium of being able to produce noodle wheat that goes into Japan, makes these incredible udon noodles, It brings me great satisfaction. I love knowing that we are doing the best we can to provide food for people. So WA are the exclusive providers of noodle wheat in Australia, and it's not an accident. You know, that is decades upon decades of relationship building.
it's everything from plant breeding, so you look at what the breeders are putting into their wheat, through to the decisions we make in terms of what soil type, what fertiliser application we use, time of sowing, all of those things, and you bring that value through to your supply chain, and you can really see all the care that is taken along the way gets rewarded because you've got a premium product that creates premium noodles. So that's something I love about the Japanese market, is that it rewards you for sustainable farming. It rewards you for high quality product. And it's also a reward for those relationships that, so I'm also on the, I'm the chair of the GIWA Grains Industry of WA committee for wheat. And I love that I have direct interaction with our Japanese customers. And I know that the wheat I put in the ground at the start of the year, where that ends up and what they need from us to make sure they've got the best product. To see the testing that these noodles go through and why it matters that our protein sits in that really narrow window, why it matters that the colour of the noodles is a certain way, the texture, the taste, the mouth feel. You know, these guys are connoisseurs of noodles. It's phenomenal. And I love that. And I love that. So I grew up on a farm up at Irwin, and my dad was one of the first people to introduce environmental management systems onto our farm. So that's an EMS back in the late 90s, early 2000s. So I've always had that lens of how you treat the land and how you treat the products that you grow impacts the end result. So I love that we have a customer in the Japanese noodle market that finds that as important as we do. That's been a really nice circularity. So I had no idea of quite how in-depth the testing was for noodles, but I certainly knew they cared as much about their noodles as we care about our farm and our land and how we choose to farm. There's been two-way conversations. There's been collaboration. The development of the parameters that the noodle wheat has to meet has actually been a really two-way street. So the Japanese explain what they want, and then we are able to come from the farmer or the West Australian perspective and say, these are the things we can do, these are the things we can influence. So we've really worked together to hit those specs, which has been amazing. To have a customer informing a farmer on the product that they're growing, but also for that loop to be closed by the farmer being able to feed information back to the customer is pretty phenomenal.
It's also like, this is such a modern approach to farming that I am seeing more and more, which is that, you know, it's not that once upon a time of we produce wool or we grow wheat and we just sell it. It's really working backwards, isn't
yep.
it? Like, and that is a real flip in mentality over the last, say, 10 or 20 years. It's very forward thinking. Do you think that's where farming needs to be or at?
Well, I think it's that thing. And I, through my roles with GIWA and with grain growers, something that I'm increasingly finding is that we need to be able to tell the story of what we are doing on our farm, not only to make people comfortable with the fact that the food they're eating is safe, that the food they're eating is sustainably produced, but also for that social license aspect of being able to farm. So I 100% believe that Australian grain growers are amongst the most sustainable, the most efficient, the most effective in the world. But we need to tell that story. It has to become a pillar of what we do. I don't think you will find many progressive farmers now who just believe they are producing a bulk commodity. I think all of us are really, really keenly aware that we are producing food. And that food needs to be safe, it needs to be consistent in quality, and we need volume. You know, we need to be able to feed the world. So, yeah, I find being a farmer that we are increasingly involved up the supply chain, and I only see that as a good thing. I only see that communication and that feedback loop as being a positive for everyone involved in our industry.
Farmer Tracy Lefroy. So we've covered the growing and the assessing. What about the eating? That bustling udon restaurant we heard at the start of the program, it isn't actually in Tokyo or Osaka. It's in Perth. It's called Hifumiya, and the owner is Daisuke Hiramatsu. He's originally from Okayama in the west of Japan, very famous for their udon. So why start an udon restaurant in Perth?
Perth, because the
Pasir is good weather, and I'm sharing my Japanese authentic food culture in Perth, and also the Western Australia. It's get a good week for. I think Western Australia, the wheat flour is, you know, good quality for the udon noodle, and you know, send it to the Japanese flour company, and they come back here. So, and I can use the flour for making the udon. It's good result for me.
Nice little flour. And Bosman loves this flour. He picks them out.
Ryo Hirose is sous chef at Hifumiya. He's one of those responsible for taking that Japanese milled Australian wheat and turning it into udon.
You're obviously starting from measuring the flour, measuring the water, and then getting the right alkaline balance in the water, and then mixing that through with the flour. And obviously it's got the protein within the flour, which needs to rest. So that resting phase will take minimum a few hours. We like to rest it overnight, because the protein's nice and relaxed and it comes out the best results possible.
And people are already lighting up.
Oh yeah, that's on a daily basis. This is a quiet day. It's the love. You see all the customers' smiles on their faces. I see the regular customers coming back. I see you. That gentleman always gets a Hifumiya original.
You remember orders.
Oh yeah. And some of them, I remember their topping as well. That's how often they come. That's how much we communicate with our customers. We're very grateful for that. That keeps us going, definitely.
Thank you. Thank you.
Every single day takes more than 4 hours, and we use the, you know, I think it's near 100 kilo for hours every day. I'm very appreciative for the Japanese company and also the Western, you know, Australia. It's so lucky for me, so lucky. Yeah, thank you very much, Australia.
If there's a caricature of Australia as an agricultural and resource exporter, it's been well, dig it up, ship it out. Never mind the quality, feel the width. But Christy, here's an example of producers seeing a specific high-quality need and setting their sights on filling it.
Absolutely, yeah. I think it is different to what we see in agriculture. I mean, I've been working for Landline for 15 years, and I would say those big bulk commodities, whether it be, you know, big numbers of cattle, big numbers of wheat, whatever, ship it out and whoever takes it, takes it. I think that's a way of the past. I think we're starting to see this new generation of farmers who really want to work with the customer or work with the export market and then go backwards from there, which is a total flip about, perhaps historically, from the way we've done it. But it's yielding the results, dare I say.
Every bite is to a weekly journey to the places where food, culture, science and history collide. Every bite tells a story. Thanks to our guests, Larissa Kato, Tomokazu Kubo, Tracy Lefroy, Daisuke Hiramatsu and Ryo Hirose. And they were speaking with Christy O'Brien for ABC's Landline. Every Bite is made on Wurundjeri country and produced by Kim Jurek. I'm Jonathan Green.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. You can discover more ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.